Brother Eric. Kevin, are you with us?
I am, hi.
All right, Brother Eric, meet Kevin Annett. Kevin, meet Brother Eric John Phelps.
Hi, Kevin, I think we met before.
Yeah,
yes, we have.
We spoke before, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So you guys do know each other. Wonderful. All right, Kevin, just to let you know, I did actually speak to Brother Eric prior to getting on this evening, and I did explain to him that we wanted to chat to him and get a little bit more information with regards to his knowledge through his work with Vatican Assassins. Is that okay, Brother Eric?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Kevin, I think I'll let you start.
Sure. Well, anyway, it's good to talk to you again, Eric. Hope it's going well.
My pleasure.
I know it's hard times these days for all of us. Well, one of the things that we're finding, I guess you know we're posting online some of the evidence starting with genocide in Canada, but the second round of cases we're going to look at in the new year and spring are addressed specifically at the Vatican. And I'm trying to piece together more of not just the history, but the way it operates, especially its financial arm in the Vatican Bank and that. So, and of course, the Jesuits and their whole role in all this is really, really central. So I'm wondering, it'd be good to pick your brain a bit about any that might help that, you know, that whole investigation.
Sure. I'm happy to help. Yeah. So we're going to deal with the Vatican Bank first? Is that what you want to address?
If you could, share anything you know about that. Yes, and then do it by in, right?
Okay. According to the Count in Venice, my friend, he says the IOR, the Institute of Religious Religious, what is the Institute of Religious Workings or so on, but it's the IOR, the Vatican Bank there.
Yep.
He tells me that is the most powerful bank in the world, and it oversees all the central banks. That's how big and powerful it is. And that's why the scam many years ago with Marcinkus and the others was so important, because this involved the central bank of the world. So it is the bank that regulates all the other central banks, and in America it regulates the Federal Reserve Bank. In fact, the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City, the building is patterned after one of the Vatican royal family's buildings in Italy. And in the movie The Godfather, Godfather 1, when all the mafia dons are meeting to draw peace with Marlon Brando up there, they just happen to be meeting in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York City.
Uh-huh.
They don't caption that in the movie, but that's the building. Uh-huh. So that shows that the Vatican has the ultimate power over all the banking, and they have 10 primary families that oversee this, and those 10 families include the Farnese's, the Aldobrandini's, the Conti's, and others. They're the gigatrillionaires.
Do you have a list of do you have a list of those families somewhere? Is there a site or something where you can...
Yes, you can go to my website, and you can just Google a chart, and there'll be several charts that come up. And one of the charts will be the royal families, the Roman families, and the chart of power. You'll see it there. And I have all 10 names there.
Do you have any information, Eric, on the financial concordat agreements between the Vatican Bank and various governments?
I don't, but the nations that do have concordats today are Colombia, that's one. Showing that the Pope controls the entire emerald trade out of Colombia. And then it has a concordat with Germany, and the concordat with Germany is the same concordat that was negotiated with Hitler.
So do you mean the concordat with Germany, it was the one still in place that was signed in 1933?
That's correct. Still in place.
It was never annulled?
Never annulled. And remember, the Knight of Malta, Franz von Papen, was the one who negotiated that for Hitler, and it was continued under Knight of Malta Konrad Adenauer.
Right. Well, so, all those CIA guys too were Knights of Malta too, right?
That's right. That's
John McCone, and who was super, right, kind of oversaw of Germany after the war and all that.
John McCone, you have one who was responsible for Chase Manhattan Bank after the war. He was Chase Manhattan Bank, and then you also have him in, who was the overseer of Germany after the war. What's his name? He was a brother-in-law to Konrad Adenauer. He was involved in the Kennedy assassination. John J. McCloy.
Mm-hmm. McCloy is who I'm thinking of, right?
That's the
McCloy.
One. Yep.
He was with Chase Manhattan. He's the one who he reprieved a lot of the these top Nazis who were sentenced.
Oh, yes.
He reprieved all their sentences down to 11.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It was outrageous. And he did that as the overseer, I think the formal title was, of Germany after the war.
I heard that his he worked at the IG Farben headquarters in Frankfurt, which
yeah,
was unbombed. Yeah,
yes,
unbombed.
That's correct. Yep.
Yep.
And then IG Farben breaks up into the other pharmaceutical giants we know today, of Pfizer and others.
Yep. Oh, that's another. Since you brought up Big Pharma, we're trying to research more of the links between Big Pharma and the Vatican, in terms of the drug testing the Catholic Church was doing in all their schools and orphanages and that. So, do you have anything on that?
No, I don't, but I do know, I have something that a Knight of Malta, Otto Ambrose, it's in my book. He was a Knight of Malta, and he was one of the leaders of IG Farben. And Herman Abs, ABS, he was another.
ABS, right, yeah, I know.
So those guys were knights, and hence the ones running the Big Pharma today, like Searle, what are the, some of the big ones? They're all knights. Who are the big vaccine people?
Roche Pharmaceutical and that in Switzerland.
Yeah, the big, yes.
Bayer.
Vatican Knights.
Bayer Pharmaceutical even has the Knight of Malta cross as its emblem.
By the way, we have a big Bayer manufacturer here in Myerstown, Pennsylvania, very big. And one night I was out to eat at the local restaurant, which is a very nice place. There was a table of men there, all speaking German. And they're all working for Bayer.
Bayer is tied into Monsanto as well, I understand.
Yes, and remember the founder of Monsanto, Sweeney, he was a Knight of Malta too. Yeah. His company worked with Walt Disney, because you had a whole Monsanto area in Disneyland and later in Disney World. And Walt Disney was another knight.
Right.
His brother Roy was a member of the Knights of St. Gregory.
Yeah.
Like Rupert Murdoch.
Any idea what the annual assets are, or income and assets of the Vatican Bank?
Have no idea, but it's super.
Yeah.
It's greater than all the major corporations involved. If you want to get a book on just touching the surface of this, get the book The Vatican Billions by Avril Manhattan.
I have actually read that, Brother Eric. I've got it listed in the bibliography of my book. So yes, I concur. It's an excellent book. I did quickly want to ask you, do you know if there are any concordants in place for other colonial places such as Australia, New Zealand, or South Africa?
Not that I know of. But I maintain that because the communist nations can do things in secret, that Joseph Stalin entered into a concordat with the Pope in 1922 when Edmund Walsh was there. Remember, Walsh, Jesuit Walsh from Georgetown, was there for 2 years, from 22 to 24, overseeing the installation of really Stalin as secretary of the Communist Party in 22 till the day he died.
What was his name?
Edmund Walsh, W-A-L-S-H. Edmund Walsh was one of the most very powerful American Jesuits from World War I. He was at the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah.
He was at the Bolshevik Revolution. He was also, he also released, that top Nazi, Haushofer, Karl Haushofer. He released him in Nuremberg. When Haushofer should have been tried for war crimes and executed, Walsh was in an army colonel's uniform, I think he was a colonel, and released him from going to trial. Edmund Walsh was the one who founded the School of Foreign Service, and it's presently at Georgetown today, and he was the one that pioneered the use of the translating tools that were used in Nuremberg and that were used in Tokyo. And there, he could censor all the anti-Vatican testimony out of the records. And one of the men that was part of that went on to be a notable broadcaster in America, and that was Walter Cronkite.
Do you know his corporate ties were, this Edmund Walsh?
Well, he was the D deep intimate friend of Francis Cardinal Spellman. And if you read the book The American Pope by Cooney, John Cooney, yeah, which was written in 1973 or so.
Yeah.
1988. John Cooney calls Cardinal Spellman the American Pope. And therein he gets into all the financial investments of Spellman when he was running St. Patrick's Cathedral. And it is huge. We're talking Goodyear Rubber, Firestone, Lockheed, Monsanto. It's all the corporate, all the Fortune 500 on Wall Street are all essentially Vatican controlled.
This Walsh guy, it's interesting. I heard the name in relation to something else. And was he with Chase Manhattan at all, or was that somebody else?
That was somebody else. Walsh was really the diplomatic king here. He was the one who was behind the Lend-Lease to Stalin.
Yeah.
He was the one with MacArthur. I have a picture of him walking out of the courtroom, military courtroom in Tokyo there, when they were trying a Tojo. Of course, they dismissed Hirohito, their brother Freemason. Walsh was also an Atamalta, by the way. And so he was very much involved in governing the affairs of state. He was FDR's right-hand man. When FDR formally acknowledged Joseph Stalin's Russia in 1933, just about as soon as he came into office, it was Walsh that was sitting next to FDR in the White House when he formally did so.
So I guess because the Vatican Bank is so secret, these figures aren't published anywhere, or are they?
Never. Oh, no, they're not published.
At least not accessible to anybody.
No. Because, you see, they're considered private records of a private corporation.
But private corporations can be like under the SEC and that.
That's true, but remember, it's under a sovereign state, the sovereign state of Vatican City, so it's exempt or immune from any prosecution. And remember also that the Pope is a sovereign, a king in the law. He's also regarded as the king of Rome. So he cannot be sued.
Well, I thought the heads of state can be, though, under... they've attempted on a couple of occasions with... they tried to extradite Ariel Sharon.
But you see, he's only a prime minister. Presidents and prime ministers can be sued, but not sovereigns like the Queen of England or the Pope, Queen Beatrix. They cannot be sued.
Okay. Brother Eric, I need to ask you about the Jesuit issue of vengeance. I've come up quite often in your book, Vatican Assassins, that the Jesuits are quite vengeful people. Like, for example, they'd have a problem with someone's grandparents and then they'd go kill off the grandchildren somewhere down the line because they were just very vengeful people. In relation to what's going on in South Africa with the killing off of the white Protestant Boers, Is that related?
Absolutely.
Could you explain that in detail to me? Because I've had somebody on my show yesterday talking about the subject.
Okay. Remember the Boers were essentially Dutch, French, and German. It was a kind of a mixture. Primarily Dutch, but French and German were involved. And they escaped Europe in the early 1600s to found Cape Town. And then for the purpose of escaping the Holy Office of the Inquisition that was burning heretics and auto-de-fés in every major city in Europe. So they got out. And they, because they were the great shippers and mariners, they went down to the farthest place away that they knew of to get away from papal Europe, destroying the Reformation at the time, and moved into South Africa. Well, they then moved north, and they purchased the land that they ultimately dwelt on from the Zulus. They never stole it from the Zulus. In fact, the Zulus shed first blood, which led to the Battle of Red River, where the Boers just annihilated 15,000 Zulus, but they never started it. So the Boers were protected by the Lord, and he gave them a place to live, because all they wanted to do was have freedom of worship. And the Jesuits regarded them as escapees from Europe. So when the Jesuits took over the British crown with no later than King George III, they then used the crown to further their ends. And one of those ends was to go after the Protestants, the Protestant white nations of the world. That's what they did when they made war on us here in America. And that's what they later did against the Boers in the 19th century, in the 1800s, when they started their Boer War, their two Boer Wars, for the purpose of annihilating them. When they did not succeed in doing that, then they had to back off for a while, but then they continued to press the matter. The Boers, the South Africans, got their own republic under Hendrik Verwoerd for a while, but Hendrik Verwoerd, who rightly advocated, which I believe, racial separation into nationhood, and there were many, many blacks who were backing him in this, he was knifed through the heart in the Parliament of South Africa, brutally murdered, and they didn't clean up the blood from all the blood all over the rug for 4 years as a warning to anybody that would dare want to have their own white Protestant nation of South Africa. So after the British killed him using one of their assassins, after the Jesuits used the British crown to do it, then ultimately they began their systematic destruction of South Africa with the denunciation of apartheid. And then when they destroyed apartheid using Bill Clinton, that Jesuit-trained individual, then they forcefully race-mixed South Africa. And as Jefferson said, both races equally free cannot live under the same government. This is exactly what we're seeing now, the destruction of the whites in South Africa by way of the Jesuits using their African National Congress, Louis Malema, Nelson Mandela, Mbeki. Mbeki and Mandela are both Knights of Malta, by the way.
Brother Eric, just want to say it's Julius Malema is this African National Congress youth leader who was actually expelled after pointing the finger at Nikki Oppenheimer, which is very, very naughty of someone in the African National Congress to do, because as you know, Nikki Oppenheimer owns half of South Africa and of course is a Knight of Malta. But Julius Malema has been going around saying, kill the farmer, kill the Boer. Is this directly from Jesuit rhetoric?
Oh, yes, that's Jesuit rhetoric, because the Boers are all Protestants. There aren't any Catholic Boers. They're all historically Protestants. And they are the food producers of the country. So we're going to do two things. We're going to kill the Protestants, pursuant to the Council of Trent, and we're going to kill the food producers, so after we do that, we can bring all the blacks into starvation. And that's exactly what they've done in Rhodesia, a.k.a. Zimbabwe. What they've done in Zimbabwe, they're going to do in South Africa.
Eric, just a thing I'm trying to remember from my theological training. The Council of Trent, was that where the Jesuits were given the official okay, or was that something else?
No, the Jesuits were brought into the papacy in 1540 with a papal bull of Paul III, who was a Farnese, one of the royal families. But the Council of Trent was the formal denunciation of the doctrines of the Reformation, justification by faith alone, and so on. And that council lasted for 18 years. It lasted from 1545 to 1563, on and off. And it ends up with, accursed, accursed be all heretics. So the Council of Trent condemns everything that was taught and preached during the Reformation. And then the Jesuit fourth vows to go into all the historic white Protestant nations, destroy them all, kill the leaders if they can't kill them openly, then they kill them secretly, for the purpose of restoring them all back to the Pope's temporal power. The problem is, all the historic white Protestant nations are now under temporal power. Canada, ever since Trudeau, has been under the temporal power of the Pope. The U.S., ever since Theodore Roosevelt at the latest, has been under the Pope's temporal power.
Talk a bit about Trudeau and that connection. I know he's Jesuit.
Trudeau was completely in control of the Jesuits. I believe he was also a Knight of Malta. I have his nephew was a man on my program, who the nephew of the Jesuit that advised Trudeau. He's been on my program. His name escapes me right now, but I can get him for you if you want. He's a Canadian.
Trudeau's son Justin is running for the Liberal Party leadership and might end up being Prime Minister if he becomes.
Yeah, and remember, the Jesuits seek to destroy historic white Protestant English Canada by making them all subject to Quebec and taxing the English Protestants for the benefit of the Quebecan Catholics. That's been their whole design for years. That's why they're shoving French down the throats of all the English speakers, but they won't have English. They don't want to have English in Quebec. And when I was in Quebec about 2 years ago visiting a defrocked bishop, a name of Gerard Buffard, he took me out to a restaurant, and I was just being courteous to some of the Quebecans there, they wouldn't even talk to me. He said, Eric, don't waste your time. You're English. They will not speak to you. So the Jesuits have imbibed a great hatred among the Quebec French people for the English Protestant peoples. And I've experienced that firsthand. But you're going to have Trudeau there. He's going to advocate more of the same. And I maintain that when the final Sino-Soviet Muslim invasion comes to North America, the Pope's European Union is going to get Quebec. They're going to get the Maritimes. They're going to get Nova Scotia. But everything else is going to the Chinese and the Russians.
Wow. Brother Eric, what you've just said there about even like it's, there's in the same race groups, like even on white people, there's a snobbery in language. We've got the same situation in South Africa where the white Afrikaans speaking and the white English speaking, actually there's a rivalry. Like on coastal places where I grew up, for example in Durban, it's a predominantly an English speaking place. And when you have people from Johannesburg during the holiday season coming down who speak Afrikaans, for some other reason, there's always fights between the local surfers, who are very territorial, and the people who come down from Johannesburg who don't speak English. It's always the Afrikaners and the English getting into fights, and it happens every holiday season. And it's like something is either it's programmed into them at some level.
Well, you know, the Afrikaners regard that as their country, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And because they're the descendants of the first settlers, and the English, it's not essentially their country. So that's the problem, because, you know, if I was an African, I would resent the presence of the English there. They don't belong there. They came there to subjugate the country for the Pope. They came there in the Boer War. What did they do? They stole all the diamond mines. They stole the gold mines. You have that evil, wicked Cecil Rhodes, who designed his round table after the Jesuit order. He considered himself to be the Jesuit general of the round table, and his personal friend was the Archbishop of Westminster at the time. So the Afrikaners have a right to their country, and the English, I regard them as invaders. They need to leave. They are the ones responsible for destroying the South African Republic in the first place. So that's how I look at it, and if the English need to repent about it, and they need to say, okay, we're in your country, we'll do our best to learn Afrikaans, and so on, but I regard the English as the invaders.
Yeah. Unfortunately, now South Africa does. It's like you can't look at a white Australian and say to them, "You're descended from an Englishman or that man or an Irishman or whatever." In South Africa, white South Africans consider themselves South African. We don't even look at like our ancestors anymore and say, "Oh, we're descended from this and this European, you know, group." It's just now a case of we need to kind of work it all out and start working together and work out our differences because, you know, we've been fighting each other for so long it hasn't worked.
I would agree completely. And because, what are there, only 4 million whites left in South Africa?
I don't even think there's that many left.
Maybe less than that.
Yeah,
you
probably.
You've got 40 million blacks and most of them are foreigners, aliens out of Africa because the highest standard of living for blacks in Africa was South Africa.
And they, you have no idea how they are shipping in uneducated, unskilled Chinese workers. I have a friend who's just come back from Asia, back to South Africa. My best friend in South Africa calls me up saying that he was on a plane packed, Cathay Pacific plane packed with unskilled Asian workers. Now, 40% unemployment rate in South Africa. What are they doing shipping in more uneducated people? And my friend said there were so, these Chinese guys were so sort of primitive and basic that they were licking the butter because you don't get butter in China. They were the single serving butter on the airplane, they were licking it. They didn't know what to do with the plastic forks and knives.
Well, let's think about this a little bit. Who did you say was that leading man in South Africa that owns, what, 40% of the land?
Well, this is the Oppenheimers, of course.
The Oppenheimers. You said he's a Knight of Malta?
Yes, the Oppenheimers are Knight of Malta.
Because remember, this is a Jewish family that has become Catholic.
Yes, that's
correct. And they're Knights of Malta, just like the Rothschilds.
Yeah, correct.
They've become Catholic, and they're all Knights of Malta.
Yeah.
Okay, so now what you have is, because the Jesuits using their Knights of Malta are expanding the Chinese dominion. All these Chinese in Vancouver, the Chinese in San Francisco, the Chinese they're bringing them all around the world. And Chinese are full now Jamaica. I have some black Jamaican Christian friends. They tell me they have these young Chinese engineers that are coming in. They're taking our jobs as engineers. What China is doing, because China is run by the Knights of Malta. Remember, Alexander Haig was the senior advisor for the Chinese Overseas Shipping Company. that they're building this huge commercial military colossus for future invasion. And I maintain that the bringing in of these Chinese into South Africa, they are fifth column. They're usually young men. And they're bringing in there because China is planning on an invasion of Africa.
I agree.
And when they get into Africa, they're going to get all those wonderful natural resources. The Jesuits intending to destroy the Boers and the white South Africans. See, once you destroy the white man in South Africa, you don't have no real soldiers anymore. And so all you have is the blacks. The blacks can't stand up to an invading Chinese military force. They'll be annihilated. And so this is part of having a future successful Chinese invasion into Africa.
That's incredible. Brother Eric, okay, now with regards to the Jesuits, is there any more direct evidence with regards to their involvement sort of in various aspects of genocide? Kevin's actually got some documents from, I think, Reverend Derrier, Bishop Derrier, who was a Jesuit. Do you have anything that could help us with that?
Only in history.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little reverberation here.
Sorry.
That's all right. The Jesuits are the great masters of genocide. Okay. We know they were the designers of the concentration camp system in Germany and in the Eastern Europe. Their knights built Auschwitz. And we also know that the Jesuits, in running Joseph Stalin through their chief Jesuit, Alexander Poskrevyshev, that they set up the whole Gulag system, which was a concentration camp system in communist Russia, and killing off the accursed, heretic, Orthodox Russian Christians. So they're the masters of genocide. They oversaw the Darfur massacre in Africa, between what you had, the Rwanda massacre, pardon me, between the Hitsis and the Tutsis. The Jesuits were completely behind that. The Jesuits, because they run Red China, were behind the massacre in Tibet. They completely oversaw that massacre. So they are masters of massacrings. They're masters in wars. Remember, world wars are all designed to massacre specific targeted populations. In World War II, the targeted populations were not only the Jews of Europe, but also the white German Lutherans of Prussia. That's why Jesuit Stalin, ordered all of his men to rape every German woman they could find, so they raped 8 million of them. And then his patent wasn't allowed to go to Berlin to stop it. So it was intended to destroy the historic white Protestants of Prussia, which the Jesuits hated. And then we're also going to destroy the Protestants of the Netherlands. We're going to bomb Rotterdam. We're going to destroy 25, 27 million Orthodox Russians through starvation and through the Nazi invasion. So you have these targeted populations for destruction, so that once you destroy that manhood, then you can implement the political power, the temporal power of the Pope over that country after the war. And that's what they're doing, and that's their continual plan.
Okay. Kevin, do you have anything else you want to ask?
I'm thinking, kind of my main concern right now, there's two things. There's the Vatican Bank link, and then there's specific information on the Jesuits that would relate to their activity in Canada, related to the Indian schools and all that. Anything like that would help at this point, but I know that's those are big areas. So.
You mean as far as for legal proceeding?
Well, yeah, to gathering the documentation and the hard evidence on this stuff.
I'll find that gentleman in Canada for you, whose uncle was this powerful Jesuit, and he might have something. His name is Dennis, I'll get his last name, but he might have something on it from what his uncle told him.
Thank you.
There's no doubt that the Jesuits were completely behind it. They ran the Church of England, they ran the papacy, they ran all of it. And remember, they hate the natives there, because the natives in Canada resisted them, and the natives here, the American Indians here, resisted them. Remember, they tried to do to the American Indians what they did to the Guarani Indians in Paraguay, and the American Indians walked off the reductions here. They wouldn't do it. They walked off them in Oregon.
Well, the Jesuits had the Yeah, the Jesuits had the plan for the original Indian boarding school system. They modeled it on the, what they call the watchman system, where they'd go in and wipe out the traditional leadership in the Indian communities and elevate the Catholic chiefs into prominent positions.
Perfect sense. That's exactly what they do. And here, the way they killed off some of the American Indians, they sewed anthrax, smallpox, into the blankets and gave them as gifts.
Yeah, we've got that British General Amherst, the Pinkback Indians in Nova Scotia, published his journal where he describes doing that. That might be somebody to check out. I know Jeffrey Amherst, see if he has a Jesuit link somewhere. But yeah.
And remember, in the 1700s, you had the Jesuit of Berkeley Square, who was the advisor of George III. So we must presume that once the Jesuits got hold of the British crown and George III, they never lost control. Never. And when they were suppressed by the Pope, England became the dumping ground for all the Jesuits of Europe.
What's the name of the top Jesuit in England, do you know?
He's a provincial there, and I don't know his name right now. I think the provincial just changed, but I can find that for you if you want.
I'd like to find him and the Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, that he would have a tremendous jurisdiction over Canada because that's part of the English province, I believe. Yeah.
Brother Eric, let me ask your opinion on Desmond Tutu. I've recently interviewed Michael Tellinger, who's running something called the Ubuntu Party, which is the new big political party in South Africa that's supposed to liberate and free everybody. However, being the skeptical journalist, I have my doubts about this guy because his Ubuntu Party has been promoted by none other than Desmond Tutu.
Desmond, according to my ex-bishop friend, Gerard Buffard, he knew Bishop Tutu. And he said Bishop Tutu was no doubt completely in the hands of the Jesuits. That's why Tutu was the prophet of that Antichrist Nelson Mandela. Okay. So they both worked together for the destruction of historic white Protestant South Africa. And then Obama gives Tutu the Presidential Medal of Freedom Award. A picture of it.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Yeah, we recently had him over here in Holland, standing in front of a crowd, encouraging everyone to take vaccinations.
I'll let Boris to keep in power.
Sorry.
Say that again, they wanted to take vaccinations.
Sorry, Kevin, were you saying something there?
No.
Okay, sorry there. Brother Eric, I was saying that Desmond Tutu was over here recently talking to people in a public square. Afterwards, he was actually knighted as Commander of the Order of Orange Nassau straight after this event, where he stood in a square here in Holland and told everyone that people in Africa need vaccinations and that vaccinations are great. And, of course, we all know what vaccinations are about.
Well, you know, that's just part of the Jesuit Medica.
Yeah. Well, he was there as the puppet of the Medical Knowledge Institute.
And who is a part of that? That evil, wicked Queen Beatrix.
Yeah.
Who's at the House of Orange, is she not?
Yes, that's correct.
And she's a Dame of Malta. She was knighted in the Knights of Malta by Prince Bernhard. Mm. And so what the knights are doing is they're using their black tobies to destroy the black populations of Africa.
Wow. Okay. Kevin,
I have three black supporters. Okay. Very outspoken young men. And they completely get it now.
Yeah.
And I tell you, they are absolutely death on all these black leaders who are really loyal to the Pope's white power structure. Hmm. They get it. From King to Michael Lucifer, Martin Lucifer King to Al Sharpton to Jesse Jackson, all of them are agents of the white power structure controlled by the Pope.
Wow. Kevin, is there anything else you want to ask? I know Brother Eric could only spare us half an hour.
I know, and I'm actually, I've got another interview at the top of the hour myself, so I think this is good for now, but I hope we can talk again.
Oh, I do too, Kevin. I really appreciate the work you're doing. I'm praying for you, my friend. And I'm sure the Jesuits have you targeted out, and that's good.
They love to listen into our radio show when Kevin comes on, so we know that they're listening.
I'm sure.
They listened to your radio show, by the way, Brother Eric.
Oh,
yeah, they did. But listen, thank you very much for both of you for this recording. I'll edit and have it up shortly. But Brother Eric, Kevin, we'd love to do this again soon.
Thanks very much. And I'd like to talk with you a little more, Melanie, if I can, because I know Kevin needs to go, about Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Alima, if I may.
Yes, okay, Kevin. Shall I say goodbye to you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, we'll speak soon. I'm gonna let go. All right, cheers then, bye. All right, Brother Eric, let's go.
Okay, see, I'm getting letters from Boers.
Oh, yeah.
They're real desperate.
They are. Listen, I'm dealing with them at the moment.
The one guy told me, we have in the process, he said, if I told you what's in the making now, you wouldn't believe me. He said, well, all the blacks in South Africa would be very much afraid. I'm telling you, these Boers are planning a huge military attack that's going to be a surprise attack. And they're going to kill tens of thousands. And once that happens, and I don't blame them, but once that happens, all of the Jesuit Western governments are going to denounce the Boers. They're going to denounce these South Africans. They're going to embargo South Africa just like Clinton did. They're going to starve it. They're going to keep out medical supplies. They're going to keep out weapons. They're going to keep out everything. So I just hope these Boers know that when they do that, they're going to be propagandized and demonized by the post-press of the world in the attempt of saving their lives and their culture.
Brother Eric, let me just say to you that I'm working very closely with the Independence Commission Africa, who is, I mean, it's, they've got coloured people, they've got black people, they've got queer people, bushmen, Hottentots, sand people, everybody in this. And they're all ready to go to war for the Boers, okay? With the Boers. And let me just say something, that they, I've spoken to these people, they, end of last year, they were ready to start a war. And in fact, earlier on this year, just not even a month or two ago, the South African police found a stockpile of weapons in the bottom of a Protestant church in South Africa. Yeah, which are, and I thought to myself, either they're being set up or they're preparing for war.
Well, they're being set up, and I'm telling you, there's Jesuits in the midst of them, and they're going to betray them. They're going to betray this because the last thing the Jesuits want is to have all those wicked sinners running the African National Congress overthrown. So these Boers have to be very careful. They have to know there's Jesuits in the midst of them. They're traitors. And it's probably going to be through the South African intelligence, because the Jesuits run that intelligence group. So they have got to be very, very careful with who they entrust things to. But they also have to work on and talking to the Hottentots and the other blacks. And listen, if we're killed out of here, you're going to starve to death. You people are all going to die. And furthermore, you got to remember that the African National Congress only came to power with killing 40,000 blacks and intimidating the rest of the black population of South Africa to not resist the African National Congress. So they need to understand that they need to help the Boers. They need to work with them. They need to fight and die for them. And they're not going to go along with the African National Congress. And see, this, the whole idea of blacks helping the Boers will become a complete and total rebuke of the supposed racism and hatred for blacks that the Boers have. And this is why the blacks need to be a part of this, particularly the black Christians.
Well, Brother Eric, you know, recently this Marikani massacre, I don't know if you saw it on television, but it really has awakened the populace and the consciousness of people in South Africa. And they realize that the ANC government, as much as they made lovely promises in the beginning, they're no better than what they thought they were fighting against with the supposed oppressive white government. And it's really the same people behind them.
It's the same white power structure. Except they can facilitate it faster using blacks, because the blacks can say, well, we're all victims of all this white crime, and so when we go and we do our duty, we're just getting even. So they can facilitate it faster. They do the same thing here. They couldn't facilitate all the socialist communism in this country as fast under Clinton as they can under Barry Obama. So that's what they've done. And they're doing this. It's the same exact program of socialist communism, annihilate the white Protestants, exalt the blacks. It's the same exact Protestant program here that's in South Africa.
Okay. You want to speak specifically about the Oppenheimers and Julius Malema. Let's get on to that.
Yes. What's that guy's full name?
I know you wrote to me Louis Malema. It's Julius Malema.
Julius, that's right. Julius
Malema. He was actually the, let me tell you a very interesting story. He was the head of the African National Congress Youth League, and he was supposed to become the next sort of president, so to speak. He was in line, but he had the whole youth behind him, okay, charismatic, strong, feisty. But he did something that was very, very naughty by the Jesuits. At one stage, I mean, he was going on about kill the farmer, kill the boer, going on with this race hate speech for a couple of years, but no one did anything about it. However,
that's what the Jesuits wanted.
The African National Congress, within a week of him doing the following, they kicked him out. Guess what he did? He stood up at a rally and pointed the finger at the Oppenheimers, saying that the Oppenheimers own a whole bunch of Africa's money, which, of course, he's not supposed to do. Okay, being a Jesuit stooge. Within a week, he was removed from his post as leader of the Youth League of African National Congress. But it's okay, the Jesuits are now using him
He stood up at a rally and pointed his finger
at the Oppenheimers. He basically said, Nicky Oppenheimer is where all the money is. He pointed the finger at the Oppenheimer, and he was removed from his post within a week as African National Congress youth leader. But that being said, he's still a Jesuit puppet because he's now heading up another party, political party, where he's been put as the head of. And this political party is the people that have come together after this Marikani massacre. Okay, so now the Jesuits have used this whole Marikani massacre to parlay whatever action they need to come forward. And then there's an agenda being moved up with a rapid speed in South Africa. But now they've put Julius Malema as the face in front of this group of disgruntled workers that, you know, were shot down. So that's their infiltration into that group of protesters.
I see. And what happened in this massacre?
Well, basically, let me just say to you, the minimum wage in South Africa is slave wages. Those miners work. South Africa has the worst record. My grandfather was killed in Oppenheimer's mines in one of the worst mining disasters in history. Okay, 500 people killed in a cave-in. My grandfather was a mining engineer. So I know that the history of the very, very bad mining records. Now, what happened
Now, is this mine a gold mine?
This is a platinum mine just out near Rustenburg the one that my grandfather was killed in was the Colesberg mining disaster. It was actually a coal mine. But the one where the Marikani massacre happened early on this year was a platinum mine just out in an area called Rustenburg, which is quite close to Johannesburg. But basically, the miners were protesting for more money because they were, Brother Eric, they get paid like less than $500 a month to put their life on the line. And the cost of living in South Africa is now higher than Europe and America, with electricity the most expensive in the world. Okay, so can you imagine $600?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, that's actually $400 with exchange rate.
They're all black workers.
And it's ridiculous. It's not enough money, okay? It's just not enough money to live on in South Africa. So they protested, they're fighting for their human rights. You know what the police did? The police came along and said, get back to work or we kill you. And apparently gunshots were fired by someone. It's not really clear who, but the police just opened fire on all these miners. And I think in the end there was something like 50 of them that were just shot dead.
Now, were the miners white and black, or were they all black? All black. Okay. Mm. Well, that's good. I'm not good that they were killed, but you see, now we have the oppression of black people who are trying to work and take care of themselves by a black government.
Yeah.
And so that makes other blacks say, wait a second, what's going on here? This black government's not for the black people. Look what they did to all these people here. And see, now the Boers can come and say, look, this is the Pope's white power structure. You got to always stress that. This is the Pope's white power structure running the ANC that killed these black miners that were working as slaves. This is a time for the Boers and otherwise to step in and defend these blacks who were working as miners that they were murdered by the white power structure.
Yeah. You know, Brother Eric, it's the most important thing for South Africans to look past is, in fact, the black and white thing. Because you know what? It's not about black and white. It's about the manipulation by the Jesuits. You know, the people, you got the Jesuits, the manipulators, then you got everybody else. And it doesn't matter what color we are, we're all going to be victims.
That's right. But I'm saying that Henry Vouard had it right. Racial separation and nationhood.
Yeah.
It's a biblical principle. So what you ought to be saying is this. The blacks need to have a section. And we need our section. And then once we separate racially, we're not going to be able to be agitated one against another. And furthermore, like Henry Vaward says, we can enter into treaties of amity and commerce. We can trade with one another and so on. But you have your nation, and we have our nation. That is what the Jesuits will never want to permit.
And why was that? Explain to us exactly.
Because a white nation that is Protestant cannot be conquered if it's truly nationalistic. It cannot be conquered. You cannot conquer them. That's what we proved in the American Revolution. That's what the British proved under Cromwell. That's what the Swedes proved under Gustavus Adolphus. That's what the Dutch proved under William of Orange, the first. You cannot conquer a white nation that is Protestant, reading a Bible, that's armed, that's led by truly nationalistic leaders. You can't conquer them. So what you've got to do to conquer them is you have to race mix them. And when you race mix them, then you can foment all this agitation of racism and prejudice and who's in control and so on. You divide them, you weaken the army like the American army is so weakened now by its forced integration and all the black-on-white crime in the American military and the black sergeants picking on all the white boots all the time. So you divide them, you rob them of their patriotism, they no longer have a unity of race, language, and culture, and you conquer them and you can keep them conquered. And do the same thing with the blacks, except they bring in different black tribes to mix them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Racial separation of the nationhood is very important if you're going to resist the Jesuits, especially if you're white, because the Jesuits know the only people that can resist their white power structure are white people who are Protestant, period, and Baptist.
No, Brother Eric, I know you get a lot of stick from people saying that you're racist in your approach, but you know, to understand the subtle nuances of what racial separation and racism is, it's two different things. Racial separation is respecting culture. Racism is disrespecting it.
That's right. Racism is hating someone else, not your race. So racialism is respecting the race, language, and culture of other people, and I extend that to other white people. I extend it to Asians. You know, I don't believe white men should be marrying Japanese women or Chinese women. Therefore, their own people. And by the way, I just have an article here that I picked up in 2009 where a white guy is one quarter Japanese, and because he's of mixed race, he cannot find bone marrow to transplant into him for his cancer.
Oh, goodness.
See? So what you have is when you have this race mixing, you have a weakened species, you can't treat them like you would treat others, they have combination of viruses and infections in their body, they're going to live shorter lives, they're going to be weaker. And so that's exactly what the Jesuits want in the weakening of the nations.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose that's their whole purpose of prima nocte, where they go and they breed people out.
That's right, prima nocte, first night. So we're going to breed them out of existence. That's why they use the Russians to breed into the German women, to breed the Germans right out of existence. That's why they put black American soldiers and black French soldiers and black British soldiers in Germany for 45 years, hoping that they would continue to weaken the German race by all the fornication and the bastard children that would be born out of that would be hybrids. That's the reason why they put Germany, one of the key reasons why they put it under partition for 45 years. We cannot allow a German race that's united by a common race, language, and culture to ever exist in Europe again, because it might become Protestant, and then we're going to have a Protestant Fourth Reich, and we're going to have a serious enemy on the continent to the Pope's temporal power, like the Second Reich was.
Yeah. And this is interesting because, of course, rape is used as a weapon of genocide, and there's an epidemic of it in South Africa. I mean, Johannesburg's the rape and murder capital of the world.
Yes. Yes. And they do the same thing here in the U.S. There's 40,000 black-on-white rapes every year, at least. That's 100 white women a day.
Yo.
They kill 10 white people a day in this country.
Yo.
So it's not ending, and they're not being punished. It's being encouraged by the press, and we white people are supposed to go around with our tail between our legs and be so ashamed of ourselves, and all we ever did was persecute them, which is nonsense.
Yeah, your brother Eric, you know, because of all the activism and work that I do, you know how many times black people point fingers at me and call me an apartheid apologist, and I feel like saying to me, you know what, apartheid was a bloody illusion. It was designed to get us to a certain point so that they could get their black knights in place through the African National Congress. It was never about giving black people their rights. Black people, we are more enslaved and worse off after Mandela than we were before.
That's correct. Absolutely right. And furthermore, when you have racial separation, and Henrik Verwaard was the author of apartheid. See, I think apartheid's just fine. I think racial separation, I believe segregation and apartheid is correct, but you have to have apartheid with the idea of bringing each people to nationhood. You just don't keep them there. And that was the problem of the South. You have racial separation with no intent of ever allowing those blacks to come to nationhood. So, and this is why Malcolm X was so well heard, because he talked about black nationalism and the nationhood. So I believe any Christian man, any Christian leader, and this is what Rowan Warder, he had apartheid unto nationhood. That's what he was working for. And that's why he had many, many black tribal leaders on his side. This the Jesuits would not allow. So they killed him.
Yeah. Do you know, and when you say that, I've actually found the evidence in footage. A friend of mine who I've been communicating with, put together, he's a staunch Afrikaner nationalist. He put together that clip that I sent you. And it shows coming from their own mouths and talking about this, not being disrespecting each other's races, rather a respecting and building of each other's races.
That's right. You see, when you have a white, say for example, South Africa, you have a white Protestant nation there, and look at the gross national product. Look at what do they increase in their wealth? 7% a year? That's unheard of. So you have a prospering white nation, they're going to develop, and you're going to, because it's Protestant, you're going to have a thriving Jewish community. And in this thriving Jewish community, because they're the most intelligent people in the world, yeah, they're going to develop the iPhones. Israel is the top entrepreneurial developing nation, second only to the U.S. and China. And the reason why the U.S. is the top is we're full of Jews. And China, the reason why they're second is because they stole all of our secrets. It was given to them by the CIA. So Israel's number three. If you have a thriving Jewish community in your white country, you're going to have all kinds of high technology. It's like in Canada when they created the Avro Arrow in white Protestant Toronto. They had a large Jewish community, and there were Jews and white Protestants that developed the most advanced fighter in history in 1958. And it was only brought to that equal level with the development of the F-15. So in South Africa, if you have a white republic of Protestant peoples, and of course you're going to ban the priests, and you're not going to allow any Roman hierarchy there at all because they're treasonous, and you're going to not have any secret societies there, the Masons are not allowed, you're gone. When you have a white Protestant population there that has preaching the true gospel, and you have religious freedom for Protestants and Baptists, then you're going to have a thriving Jewish community because they're going to have their religious freedom too. They're going to have their able to engage in their commerce. And you're going to have a growing, prosperous nation. Now you have a black nation bordering this white nation. And they're going to say, look at that. Look at that. How can we want their iPhones, or we want their electromagnetic motors for our electricity, or whatever they're developing. What do we have for them? Well, we happen to have tanzanite. Or we have some high grade stones or diamonds or platinum, whatever. So what we need to do is we need to engage in a treaty with these white people. And if they teach us how to get this, they teach us how to build the mines and teach us how to get this out, and then we can get this out, and then we can sell it to them, or we can sell it to the diamond cutters in Israel or Belgium, whatever. We will be making money. They will be making money. Everybody will be making money. And we will have the exclusive right to our own natural resources because this white Protestant nation is not going to steal our national resources, because it would be sinning against God if they did. And so therefore, what you then begin to build is you begin to build a United Sovereign Nations group. So this group is going to be looking out for the sovereignty of each nation that's in it, wanting to preserve its national borders, wanting to preserve its race, wanting to preserve its culture, wanting to preserve everything that it inherited for the last 200, 300, 400, 1,000 years or whatever, and they're not out to destroy it. But we have this treaty of amity or friendship and commerce where we will trade our goods in exchange for your goods. And we have equal weights and measures, so we're not going to steal from each other. And that's how you bring prosperity and peace between nations. But the secret societies cannot exist, or they're going to undermine it, they're going to foment war between the peoples, they're going to control the leaders of both sides, cause a war, and then after that, on the ruins of that, they're going to monopolize all the natural resources and industry of both countries for the Pope. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we can see it happening now.
Yeah. Black American soldiers and black French soldiers and black British soldiers in Germany for 45 years, hoping that they would continue to weaken the German race by all the fornication and the bastard children that would be born out of that would be hybrids. That's the reason why they put Germany, one of the key reasons why they put it under partition for 45 years. We cannot allow a German race that's united by a common race, language, and culture to ever exist in Europe again, because it might become Protestant, and then we're going to have a Protestant Fourth Reich, and we're going to have a serious enemy on the continent to the Pope's temporal power, like the Second Reich was.
Yeah. And this is interesting because, of course, rape is used as a weapon of genocide, and there's an epidemic of it in South Africa. I mean, Johannesburg's the rape and murder capital of the world.
Yes. Yes. And they do the same thing here in the U.S. There's 40,000 black on white rapes every year, at least. That's 100 white women a day.
Yeah.
They kill 10 white people a day in this country.
Yeah.
So it's not ending, and they're not being punished. It's being encouraged by the press, and we white people are supposed to go around with our tail between our legs and be so ashamed of ourselves, and all we ever did was persecute them, which is nonsense.
Yeah. Your brother Eric, you know, because of all the activism and work that I do, you know how many times black people point fingers at me and call me an apartheid apologist? And I feel like saying to me, you know what, apartheid wasn't a bloody illusion. It was designed to get us to a certain point so that they could get their black knights in place through the African National Congress. It was never about giving black people their rights. Black people, we are more enslaved and worse off after Mandela than we were before.
That's correct. Absolutely right. And furthermore, when you have racial separation, and Henrik Verwaard was the author of apartheid. See, I think apartheid's just fine. I think racial separation, I believe segregation and apartheid is correct, but you have to have apartheid with the idea of bringing each people to nationhood. You just don't keep them there. And that was the problem of the South. You have racial separation with no intent of ever allowing those blacks to come to nationhood. So, and this is why Malcolm X was so well heard, because he talked about black nationalism and the nationhood. So I believe any Christian man, any Christian leader, and this is what Rowan Warner, he had apartheid unto nationhood. That's what he was working for. And that's why he had many, many black tribal leaders on his side. This the Jesuits would not allow. So they killed him.
Yeah. Do you know, and when you say that, I've actually found the evidence in footage. A friend of mine who I've been communicating with, put together, he's a staunch Afrikaner nationalist, in fact a bit too Afrikaans for my liking in terms of how staunch he is, but he put together that clip that I sent you, and it shows coming from their own mouths and talking about this not being disrespecting each other's races, rather a respecting and building of each other's races.
That's right. You see, when you have a white, say for example South Africa, you have a white Protestant nation there, and look at the gross national product. Look at what did they increase in their wealth? 7% a year? That's unheard of. So you have a prospering white nation. They're going to develop, and you're going to, and because it's Protestant, you're going to have a thriving Jewish community. And in this thriving Jewish community, because they're the most intelligent people in the world, yeah, they're going to develop the iPhones. Israel is the top entrepreneuring developing nation, second only to the U.S. and China. And the reason why the U.S. is the top is we're full of Jews. And China, the reason why they're second is because they stole all of our secrets. It was given to them by the CIA. So Israel's number three. If you have a thriving Jewish community in your white country, you can have all kinds of high technology. It's like in Canada when they created the Avro Arrow in white Protestant Toronto. They had a large Jewish community, and there were Jews and white Protestants that developed the most advanced fighter in history in 1958, and it was only brought to that equal level with the development of the F-15. So, in South Africa, if you have a white republic of Protestant peoples, and of course you're going to ban the priests, and you're not going to allow any Roman hierarchy there at all, because they're treasonous, you're going to not have any secret societies there, the Masons are not allowed, you're gone, when you have a white Protestant population there that has preaching the true gospel, and you have religious freedom for Protestants and Baptists, then you're going to have a thriving Jewish community, because they're going to have their religious freedom too. They're going to have their able to engage in their commerce, and you're going to have a growing, prosperous nation. Now you have a black nation bordering this white nation, and they're going to say, "Look at that! Look at that! How can we want their iPhones, or we want their electromagnetic motors for our electricity, or whatever they're developing? What do we have for them? Well, we happen to have Tanzanite, or we have some high grade stones, or diamonds, or platinum, whatever. So what we need to do is we need to engage in a treaty with these white people, and if they teach us how to get this, they teach us how to build the mines." And teach us how to get this out. They will charge us for this, and then we can get this out, and then we can sell it to them, or we can sell it to the diamond cutters in Israel or Belgium, whatever. We will be making money. They will be making money. Everybody will be making money, and we will have the exclusive right to our own natural resources because this white Protestant nation is not going to steal our national resources, because it would be sinning against God if they did, and so therefore. What you then begin to build is you begin to build a united sovereign nations group. So this group is going to be looking out for the sovereignty of each nation that's in it, wanting to preserve its national borders, wanting to preserve its race, wanting to preserve its culture, wanting to preserve everything that it inherited for the last 200, 300, 400, 1,000 years or whatever, and they're not out to destroy it. But we have this treaty of amity, of friendship and commerce, where we will trade our goods in exchange for your goods, and we have equal weights and measures, so we're not going to steal from each other. And that's how you bring prosperity and peace between nations. But the secret societies cannot exist, or they're going to undermine it, they're going to foment war between the peoples, they're going to control the leaders of both sides, cause a war, and then after that, on the ruins of that, they're going to monopolize all the natural resources and industry of both countries for the Pope. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we can see it happening now.
Yeah. So, see, what I want to do is, and I'm having the opportunity to have my own radio station.
Oh, really?
Yes. And what I want to have, dear, is I got a guy who speaks Polish, and he knows the Lord. He's going to be speaking to the Polish people about what's been done to them. I got a guy speaking Japanese. He knows the Lord. He's going to tell his own Japanese people what's been done to them. I got a guy speaking Chinese. He's going to tell the Chinese people what's been done to them and how they're being used by the Vatican to be this huge sword of the church. I got a guy that speaks German. He's going to speak to the Germans what was done to them in World War II. I got a guy speak Russian. I'm going to have about 10 different people speaking 10 different languages at least for an hour a week to their own people, instructing them on three things. The true gospel of Christ, to be saved, to be born again, 1 Corinthians 15:1-4. Secondly, to teach them what the Jesuits have done to them in history. And thirdly, how to resist the Jesuits and restore your national sovereignty, how to resist the Pope's temporal power. Those three things I'm going to work on so that all the other nations can see exactly what's been done to them and what has worked in the past. That's what I want to do. And I'd like to have you on for South Africa.
Oh, Brother Eric, I'd love to be honest with you.
And you speak Afrikaans, right?
I do speak Afrikaans, but the problem is that the majority of the population there, unfortunately, 80% is black, and the national language is English.
Okay, yes. Well then speak English.
Yeah, to reach the majority of the people, you got to speak English. That's the sad thing.
Okay, well then speak English, but you want to maybe every now and then speak a little Afrikaans?
I'll do that, no problem. I'd love to.
And so I'll talk with you about this once I get this set up. But if you want 2 hours, you know, I can one at the price for one hour is the same as 2 hours, and you can be on, you know, like 2 hours on one day a week, so you can prepare for your broadcast, get all your stuff together, and you can be like the top researcher for South Africa, and I have you on.
Thank you, Brother Eric. Tell you what, I would love to, if you wouldn't mind just sending me a little proposal and on email so I can just look everything over.
Well, I don't have a setup yet.
No worries. Well, that's fine. Speak to me when it's all done. I am very interested, though, so thank you.
Well, I need you for this very much.
We're here to help. This is what we do. You know, we're in service, and at the end of the day, you know, again, that old Ephesian saying, you know, do not meddle with unfruitful works of darkness, rather seek to expose them. And I thoroughly, that's one of my sayings. It's on my Facebook. And to be honest with you, I just don't see any point in carrying on unless we bring light into the dark places.
That's correct. That's correct. And expose the Jesuits for what they've done, and then you can have an understanding. I don't mean unity, but an understanding among the nations, among the races, language, and cultures, so that they can understand who is their great enemy and how to work together to keep that enemy from destroying them or subjugating them. And they can have their own countries with their own natural resources, their own production, and see, then I can go visit that country. And I can say, oh, I decided to visit a black country here, and they have this special dress. I have two African shirts that I love. They're beautiful. But they make them. Those are their shirts. And so I can go to a different culture. If I want to go to the Netherlands and get some wooden shoes, if I want to go to Japan and I want a samurai outfit. So they're maintaining their culture.
Yes.
You know, the beauty of the different cultures, of the different races, of the different clothing, of the different, how they eat. If you got chopsticks here, in India they eat with four fingers here. I mean, the beauty of the different cultures, and we have to maintain that. And we have to also teach that you want to have commerce, but your commerce should always benefit your nation. Commerce is never for international purposes. It's always for the benefit of your nation.
Absolutely. You know, Brother Eric, you touched on a very important point there. And one of the biggest paradoxes we face as a global evolving society is, how do we go about preserving our culture and passing it on to our children, and while still becoming part of a global village that uses cell phones, that we all use a basic keyboard with the same sort of set. We're all sort of becoming thinking in a mindset that's pretty homogenized into one mindset. You look at tribes in Africa, you don't see any of these little African kids running around in beads and skins. They're wearing jeans and t-shirts.
Yeah, they're a white man's manufacturing base.
Yes.
They're eating the white man's food.
Yeah.
Devitalized white bread, white rice, white sugar, it's all poison.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we have to do, we can't think of ourselves as a global community. We have to think of ourselves as global communities.
Yes.
With certain limited things in commerce.
Yes.
With certain limited things in commerce. We need to have a successful commerce. We need to preserve our national sovereignty. We need to preserve our race, language, and culture. We need to have respect for one another in that area. And so what can we do to facilitate that end? So we can contribute together and facilitate it, and for the benefit of each one of our nations. But at the same time, maintain racial separation. And we don't have to go to war, because we are going to see those inciting the wars are ultimately working for the Pope.
Yep, for sure. For sure. All right, Brother Eric, I've had you for an hour, so is there anything else you want to finish with?
I think that's about it. Okay. I enjoy talking with you. I really enjoy it to have you on a regular basis, because this needs to be done, and we're in a very critical time now. We're on the verge of a huge world war, and if we can continue to blame the papacy as the very heart of this agitation, hopefully there'll be people that will rise up who are true patriots, who love the Lord and love their people, and put a stop to it in their own countries.
Yes, absolutely. Amen to that. I hope we see that time soon. I can't take it anymore. This, I tell you, I can't bear the suffering that human beings inflict upon each other in the struggle to survive because of the system that's been placed upon us by the Vatican.
That's correct. That's exactly right. Perfectly so.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, Brother Eric, I'm going to let you go. It's 3 a.m. in the morning here. But thank you very, very much for your time. And I really want to speak to you soon.
Okay, Mel.
All right. God bless you too. Speak soon. Take care, Brother Eric. Bye-bye.